Good to continue with you this Lord's Day in worship. Good to have this opportunity to once again speak about a very important topic. Whether one finds himself married or not, it is important because if you're not married, you usually know those that are. And you might be able to have an influence, share a verse or two or a point or two that might help them in their walk with God. And as we had mentioned this morning, we have to recognize that there's only been one perfect person that ever walked the face of this earth, and that was Jesus Christ. And as Christians, we are committing allegiance to Jesus Christ and doing our best to strive for that perfection. And though we're going to find times where we're going to fall short from time to time, perhaps sin, or even if it's not necessarily sinful, but we're going to have our phobias and quirks, our little personality traits, various things like that that are idiosyncrasies to ourselves and not necessarily enjoyed by another. Again, because we are just not necessarily perfect people in this life, but these are realities of the life that we live in. And so we always have to do our best to think about others, to put others above ourselves, and to try to work together, whether that be found in a church, whether that be found in business, whether that be found in a home. Now, if you would take your Bibles, turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I'd like to start there tonight. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Paul here was speaking in a time in which his advice was to remain unmarried because of a present distress. We don't know exactly what that was, though we have probably some indication that it was some form of persecution. But recognizing that as God has said, it is not good for man to be alone, it's preferable if one has a scriptural right to be married, to be married. And he recognizes that when that takes place, that the spouse is to seek to care for the other one and to find out how to live with them in harmony and to please them. And you see that here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 33 and verse 34, where it says in verse 33, "But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife." Now, he's not putting that down. Again, he was using that to illustrate the fact that if one was married during the present distress and persecution was to take place, he's going to have a temptation to perhaps elevate his spouse above his duty to the Lord. And that was going to be a temptation. Whereas if one was unmarried, they're removed from that temptation. Right? They don't have a spouse. But he's recognizing that this is a global and general truth, that when one is married, they care about the various aspects of life here on earth, in particular, how he may please his wife. And then verse 34, you'll see at the end of verse 34, "But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband." And so you have the husband looking after and seeing how he may please the wife, and then you have the wife looking after and seeing how she may please the husband. That ought to be natural. That ought to be something that we seek to do, to learn how to please the other, to learn their particular, quote, love language, so to speak. And so we had talked somewhat about that this morning and understanding right relations with one another to have a right marriage. Now, we mentioned for the husband to speak or to show love towards his wife was more than just saying the words, "I love you." And the same for the wife, to show respect to the husband is more than just saying, "I respect you." So we want to understand more specifically the ins and outs of this. What is her love language? How do you spell it? How do you share that with her in a way in which she would appreciate? And so I've outlined some things here for us to discuss in regards to that, starting first with the woman and her love language. There's to be a closeness that she wants to have with her spouse, an openness to talk and to share the innermost thoughts and feelings, a desire, she wants to see that you have a desire for her happiness and general well-being. She would like for you to be able to own up to mistakes, to be able to look her in the eye and say, I'm sorry, I was wrong for doing that. She wants you deeply committed to her, to understanding her, and to have a close companionship with her. So we're going to just start here at the beginning and looking at the first one. We read 1 Corinthians 7, verse 33, but let's now talk about closeness and openness. Let's turn to Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon. We'll be there a number of times tonight. It is indeed a great book of love and marital love at that as well. As the Shulamite, which is the woman in the relationship, is often drawn close to her beloved, which is the man in the relationship. And here you see this closeness that she desires to have with her spouse. And when he is away, she goes out searching for him. In Song of Solomon chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, by night on my bed I sought the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. I will arise now, I said, and go about the city, in the streets and in the squares, and I'll seek the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. The watchmen who go about the city found me. I said, have you seen the one I love? Scarcely when I had passed by them, when I found the one I love, I held him and would not let him go. And there is a great biblical picture of the closeness that the woman wants to feel to her spouse in marital love. And so, yes, it means you hold her hand. You hug her. You talk to her about her day. Suggest go on a walk together that we might be able to enjoy each other's company, right? Men have to work on this. After a long day, they could be very tired and just come home and they're asked the questions, how did your day go? Did anything happen today? Nothing, right? It's one word. It's a closed conversation. That's not what she's looking for. That's not her love language. She wants to communicate. Remember again the Chuck and Mary illustration I gave at the beginning. That communication, Mary said, was so key for her and Chuck as they were beginning their marriage relationship together. You know, so this is something I need myself to be reminded of as well. The closeness and openness that she wants and desires, this is a part of spelling love for her. When she found him, she would not let him go. But also to feel cherished and happy. And that the Bible even spells out in Ephesians 5:29 that the husband is to cherish and nourish her, is what the scripture says. What does that mean to cherish? Well, I looked it up. If you cherish someone, it means to hold them in deep affection, treating them as precious and valuable through tender care and consistent support, making them feel seen, loved, and safe in your presence. That's what it means to cherish somebody else. There's a lot of depth to that, isn't there? Look here in, again, Song of Solomon, chapter 4 and verse 9 and 10. Here is a husband that cherishes his spouse. In Song of Solomon 4 verse 9, the beloved says to the woman, you have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. You have ravished my heart with one look of your eyes, with one link of your necklace. How fair is your love, my sister, my spouse. How much better than wine is your love and the scent of your perfumes than all spices. This is her love language. This is being cherished. You know, we would think it's strange to refer to our spouse as our sister. It wasn't strange in their day. It was a way of speaking about the closest of relationships, the oneness of bond. the familial affection, that closeness that resided there. And he just plainly says it, my sister, even though it wasn't a physical sister, right? And my spouse. How fair is your love? She felt treasured and cherished. Again, you read some of these lines, you think they came out of a movie, but it's out of the Bible. This is what God is saying makes for a happy home. If men will but listen and understand the needs of a spouse. It means you buy her some flowers from time to time, right? Surprise her. You think of ways to help her out. You know, someone mentioned today, you know, do the men have to do any of the chores? Well, yeah, I mean, that's one way you show that, right? That you step in and you know, hey, wash some dishes here or there, do some of the laundry, right? Take out the trash. Help her with dinner. You know, you try to step in and show that affection. Again, it shows that she's being cherished. You're seeking out for her happiness versus just always coming home and sitting down in front of the TV while she manages everything else. There's a difference. Look in Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy 24. I think this is an interesting commandment in the Old Testament given to newlyweds. In Deuteronomy 24 and verse 5, here it says, when a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war or be charged with any business. You hear that? Why? Well, he shall be free at home 1 year and bring what? Happiness to his wife whom he has taken. See, this is, you know, we think, oh, it's just frou-frou stuff. You know, hey, this is manly stuff. This is something generals commanded. Go home. Go take care of your spouse. Cherish her. Bring happiness to your wife. That's the most important business right now is what they're saying when you first are coming together. You don't need to be off to war. You don't need to be away from her for months on end. You need to be with her. You need to seek to make her happy. And so, generals didn't mock it, but rather they ordered it. They knew how a cold relationship, a bitter husband, can become harsh and cynical and resentful, and that would be the opposite in which the command is given to us to love our wives. Well, further, the Bible also says that she seeks and desires to be understood. Again, a lot of times men say, I just don't get her. And of course, because you're not her. You are male. You are different. But 1 Peter 3:7, we read it this morning, says to dwell with your wife with understanding. Live with her. This is what that means. To dwell with her with understanding means to live in an understanding way with her. You know, a metal bowl and a glass bowl are different, and therefore they have different functions. And the same is true with the husband and the wife. God gave her certain hormones and biological chemicals that we will never understand. And so to dwell or to live in an understanding way with her means we are to seek to empathize with her perspective, to validate it, to acknowledge her emotions, to make it be known that you're a safe place, that you want to see things from her viewpoint. That's so important. That means that you're just going to be sometimes find yourself just listening and not talking. She doesn't want you necessarily to fix her, but maybe just listen to her. You know, James chapter 1, verse 19, we don't apply it this way, but it would certainly apply in the marriage relationship, where James 1:19 says, so then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak. You know, that would be some good advice for men in their marriage relationship as well. And by the way, I need to add, she can tell if you're really listening or not. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. She knows. I know, I've fallen in that trap before too. agreeing to something before you even knew what it was really about, right? She wants to be understood. And she also desires companionship, right? For her to be told that she is your one and only, that you are like a team together, a duo, that she is your best friend, and as long as I have you, we can take on the world. Look here at Song of Solomon in chapter 5, verse 16. Need to get back there. Song of Solomon, chapter 5, here in verse 16. This is what the woman says about her beloved. 5:16 says, "His mouth is most sweet. Yes, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved," listen now, "and this is my friend." He called her his sister and spouse. She calls her my beloved and my friend. See? You marry your best friend. That's so important. In chapter 7, there verse 10, she says, "I am my beloved's and his desire is toward me." She wants to feel that. That companionship. And you see sometimes men make this grave mistake. They become friends with the opposite sex, some other person outside of their relationship, and hang out with them like a buddy. And that makes her feel a breakdown in their companionship. Even if it's just platonic and there's nothing going on, it can feel like that because she wants to feel that his desire is towards me and me alone. In Malachi chapter 2, Malachi chapter 2, there you have the Old Testament prophet speaking about how there was a breakdown in the home. And many of the men had treated the wives treacherously. And in Malachi 2:14, he corrects them and rebukes them. He says in verse 14, "Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you've dealt treacherously. Yet she is your what? Your companion and your wife by covenant." See, God knew that's exactly what she was made to feel, that there was this team together, this companionship together. You made a covenant with her. And because they hadn't done that, some of them divorced. And we see in verse 16, "For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce." He hates divorce. "For it covers one's garment with violence, says the Lord. Therefore, take heed to your spirit that you do not deal treacherously." And so, these are things that she needs. This is how she interprets it as you loving her. This is her love language. We have to remember this too, that love is not a feeling, though it is not without it. I'll say that again. Love's not just simply a feeling, though it's not without it. Love is a free will commitment to do God's word. 2 John 6, this is love, that you walk according to his commandments, right? And so what I'm showing you right here is that, men, these are his commandments for you. And if you love him, you're going to share this love with her. Here's what his word says your wife needs. Do it. Do it. You might say, "Oh, I'm not sure if I feel like it." Well, that means you've been out of practice for some time. But get back to doing it, and in time, the feelings will come with it. In time. Especially as she then sees how you're treating her, and she in turn wants to treat you with the respect that you're looking for. So that's what we're going to talk about next. How do we spell respect for the husband? His respect language. Let's talk about that next. You need to appreciate some things about him. His desire to work and to achieve. His desire to protect and to lead. That he wants you to appreciate his insight and counsel. His desire for friendship and also sexual intimacy as well. So let's talk about that first one. As we mentioned, 1 Corinthians 7:33 and 34, the wife is also to see how she is to to look after her husband, to care how to please her husband. So recognize this, wives. Before there was Eve, there was first work. In Genesis chapter 2, before there was ever Eve, there was first work. God had given the garden to man to tend. He was assigned work before he was ever given a wife. This is inherent within him. His need to work and to accomplish and to achieve. His work to provide brings him self-respect. And when coupled with your respect for that, it fulfills his God-given need from the very Garden of Eden. Turn to Genesis 29. Genesis 29. Don't know why I didn't put this one on the chart, but it's a good one. Genesis 29 here in verse 20. You remember the story of Jacob and Rachel? Now Jacob sets eyes upon Rachel, and he loved her. There in Genesis 29, verse 20, so he made a pact, he made a deal, right? It says, verse 20, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him. Why? Because of the love he had for her. Jacob loved Rachel. And what did he do to show that? He worked 7 years for Rachel to earn her. See, that's man at his core. He desires to work for the spouse. Those that disdain work are often filled with depression and anxiety because they're like a fish out of water. Life feels empty without accomplishment. They're not fulfilled because they're neglecting God's will for them, an inherent will built within them from the very beginning. And so women need to appreciate that the man has this need to work and to accomplish, to provide for the family. Now, I might mention this. There's some clarifications we need to make. We want to talk about working too much or not working at all, right? There's extremes to be avoided. There's some that are workaholics, right? And that's all they do all the time. And they don't have time for the spouse. That's just as wrong, right? He needs to be balanced. Make sure he doesn't neglect the needs of his wife either. Now, I realize there may be some seasons that brings more hours than others. I recognize that that can take place from time to time. But he again needs to remember her and to keep the balance. On the other end of the spectrum, the man that doesn't want to work at all, right? There really shouldn't be any Mr. Moms, right? I hope you realize that that's against God's grain for a man's brain. I mean, did Adam expect Eve to hand the baby off to him so she could go back to work? Imagine how silly of a picture that would be. No social engineering will make daddy a natural mother. It's just the truth. They have, again, an innate ability, almost magic, for lack of a better word, with the youth and the children, and especially the little babies and the infants. They have a way that they can hear a certain cry and know instantly when sometimes the man just sleeps right on through it. Right? Again, God knows the way in which He made us. Now, I recognize that there's sometimes even men in the church that see no problem with a Mr. Mom, and I'm here to tell you, you're not going to feel fulfilled in that way. And neither will the woman be able to fully respect the husband as she ought to either. His God-given nature is work. So women, in respecting Him, have you ever said, thanks? Thanks for working, for providing for me, for our household. I'm sure you thought it before, but have you told Him? See, this is His language. But further also, to respect Him, you need to recognize His desire to protect and lead. You know, it was really laid out with the illustration this morning when I talked about the military, right? It kind of starts young, inheriting in boys. They play with sticks and toy guns, right? Crab apples, I mentioned, for bombs, right? Fighting for honor, right? Again, these things are built in the man. Look at Nehemiah chapter 4. Nehemiah is given a pep talk to the men that are lined up in the wall, having to guard and potentially even go to war because they were so busy building that wall, and the enemies of God's people didn't like them building the wall of Jerusalem. Well, Nehemiah chapter 4, there in verse 13, Nehemiah 4:13, it says, "Therefore I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the openings, and I set the people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows." There's all their weapons. "And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, 'Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for,'" notice, "'your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses.'" And so he inspired them. Remember what you're fighting for. Again, this is part of who they are. They want to protect. They want to guard those that they love most and cherish most in life. I recognize there's different ways that's done today, and ways that even appears in a home today as well. For example, most men are the ones that seek out a life insurance policy, more so than the wife, right? He knows it gives him a sense of security if there's something that happens to him, to know, okay, my family's going to go on. They're going to be okay. They're not going to starve. In today's fast-moving, dual-income society, it is easy for the concept of headship and protector and leader to kind of get foggy and seem out of date. And yet the Bible's always boldly proclaimed it. Like we said in Ephesians 5, 22 and 23, he makes it very clear that the wives are to be submissive to their husbands. That means to acknowledge that he is the leader of the home. To let him know, to recognize, I'm submissive to you. You're the one that's supposed to take charge. You're the one that's supposed to lead the family in the way that is right and is not wrong. And so, just by the very aspect that God is commanding submission means that he knows that the man is supposed to lead. If I might take a little side note, just we talked about deacons and elders this morning. You know, the Bible uses the same term for submission for a congregation to an eldership. All right? And so sometimes we don't think about it that way. Just as a wife is to be submissive to her own husbands, so is a congregation to be submissive to those that lead over them. As we read, that it would be good for you and for your souls that they would serve with joy and not with grief. So that's just a side note. Submission means that then someone else naturally is a leader. And it's important that women don't think that you're giving, by giving this ground, that you're undoing your happiness. You are rather enhancing it. You tell him how much you appreciate him doing these things, protecting you and leading you, and you know what? He's liable to say, "Hey, thanks. Let me take you out to dinner tonight." Right? A man's first impulse is to serve in response to being honored. So let him be who God made him to be. On the other hand, men are most vulnerable to criticism when related to their leadership or their headship. They can feel lower than the lowest, below the ground when they're demeaned in this way. So a wise woman will always ask, what I'm about to say, is it going to come across as disrespectful? Now, she would be wise to do that before she would speak. The same principle should apply in the James chapter 1, verse 19. Be swift to hear, slow to speak. I heard a story, I'm not even sure where I heard this years ago, but of a husband that came home, worked hard all day, was worn out. Came home and was surprised to find candles all over the house. And the wife said, come on in, come on in. We're going to eat at the candlelight tonight. Candlelight dinner. Oh, he was happy. He said, that sounds like a good idea. Had a hard day. And he goes into, he says, let me go wash it up in the bathroom. Goes to the bathroom, turn on the light. Nothing comes on. Why isn't the light working? And she said, well, I didn't want to tell you, but I know you worked so hard, but we just didn't have enough for the electric bill this month. And so that's why I said, let's just eat with the candlelight tonight. See, she could have demoralized him and broke him down, but instead she knew how hard he was working and trying and sought to support him. There's a wise woman. Well, further, you should seek his insight and his counsel. Wives have loads of responsibility running the house, rearing children, and sometimes they can forget to tap a valuable resource. In fact, God said the husband is responsible ultimately to make the final call. And danger enters when his counsel is not sought. Right? I mean, that's something the Bible wants us to make sure we don't miss, especially from the story of Adam and Eve. Look there in 1 Timothy chapter 2. In 1 Timothy chapter 2. Here when he's talking about the woman in spiritual leadership or in teaching, that she shouldn't have authority over man, verse 12. And then he assigns the reason to that, verse 13, for Adam was formed first and then Eve. So it goes back to this natural created order. The man was to lead. Verse 14, here's another reason. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. She didn't seek the counsel of her husband when the serpent came and tempted her. She was deceived, whereas Adam was not. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, there in verse 3, we see here the Apostle Paul say it once again, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. He says, but I fear lest somehow as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness. And so again, she was the one deceived. She didn't seek his counsel. When a woman thinks she's got it all under control, has all the answers, does all the thinking, and then acts independently all the time and fails to seek advice, especially on bigger things, she's ignoring what Scripture says. That there was a woman a long time ago that did that, and her name was Eve. And she, not Adam, was deceived. It may have been different if he was consulted first, and maybe not. But the Bible makes sure we don't miss that point. The simple fact is that often a man will love you more when he is simply sought for inquiry, for it shows that you're truly what? Respecting him. You see that? Each one gets their primary need when that takes place. In Proverbs chapter 31, Proverbs 31. This was something that was said about the Proverbs 31 woman. This woman's worth was above rubies. That the heart of her husband, Proverbs 31, verse 11, the heart of her husband safely trusts her. And so he has the safety. He respects her. He loves her, and she does the same towards him as well. But when a husband is made to feel that his two cents would not be welcomed, right? Or if I say something, I'm going to be in trouble. And if I say nothing, I'm in trouble, but I'll be in less trouble, right? Then there's danger to that, right? And I think sometimes, and I'll watch some of those sitcoms as well too, but you know, where the husband's kind of like the doofus, you know? And he's, you know, if he says something, you know, he's going to get the beat down from the wife. That's a very modern way in which marriages are sometimes handled. And so we have to remember Eve in the garden led her husband into sin. She didn't seek any counsel, but became his agent to temptation. And so he desires to be asked, to be inquired, to be a part of her counsel. And then last year, we also see the importance of sexual intimacy, especially in regards to respecting the husband. Look over in Proverbs chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5. I'm going to share some verses with you here that you read, and you just don't read verses like this for a woman. But you read them a number of times for a man. So in Proverbs chapter 5, there in verse 15, drink water from your own cistern and running well from your own well. Should your fountain be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Now I'll tell you, he's speaking euphemistically here, but he's talking about being sexually satisfied by somebody else that's not your spouse. That's what he's talking about there. Verse 17, let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth as a loving deer and as a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and embraced in the arms of a seductress? Like I said, you just don't read verses like that for a woman. They're not visually oriented to the same degree or have necessarily those same needs to the, again, the same degree. Not to say she has no needs, but I'm just saying to the same degree as the man. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 2 and following, here you see, again, biblical counsel regarding this. 1 Corinthians 7, 2, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife. Let each woman have her own husband. So that connects to Proverbs 5 when he's saying, you know, you be satisfied with your wife sexually. For why would you want to be embraced by an immoral woman? And so here he's saying in the New Testament, because of these sexual sins that can take place, you need to make sure that you are satisfying one another in this sexual relationship. Verse 3, let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another except with consent, so that is mutually agreed for a time, that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. He's saying Satan will get in there when you deprive one another and seek to fulfill his desires with somebody else because of your lack of self-control. And so he even talks later on as well that a man may burn with passion at the end. You see there at the end of verse 9. So this is a need for both. It is. But more so for the man. And when it is lacking, some men have strayed from their marriage relationship to their own destruction. Someone once said, the devil does everything he can to bring two people together that are not married before they're married. And then after they're married, he does everything they can to separate them, to keep them apart after they're married. Again, there's many proverbs along these lines, and they're written to keep one sexually pure and out of the adultery bed. And he said to enjoy the wife of your youth, but if he's not allowed to, and another woman admires him, she may even be unattractive, but if she thinks he hangs the moon, and he's witty, and he's intelligent, well, his respect receptors are now firing. And you got to watch out, because that can be like a time bomb waiting to go off. And we might say, on the other hand, for the woman, if she's being neglected by her spouse, and he just comes, sits home, watch TV, how's your day? Oh, nah, it was fine, no big deal, nothing going on. She doesn't have her needs being met, but she's treated kindly by somebody else, listened to by somebody else, made to feel loved by another person, and that's a time bomb waiting to go off as well. Marriages grow cold when either one does not receive what they need. And that's why you see divorce rates rise and Satan win. You might need to send out an SOS. The Song of Solomon is what I'm talking about there. It has a way of making each other receive their needs. It's marriage's medicine. And spouses, if you found it where like it's hard to talk and hard to communicate, you sit down together and read Song of Solomon together. I've even suggested before reading the woman reading the Shulamite's parts out loud and the man reading the beloved's parts out loud. And it can begin to rekindle what it once was there at the beginning. You can begin to cherish one another. Like we talked about the energizing cycle this morning. When she receives the kind of love that she desires, then she makes a way to see that he receives the kind of respect that he desires. And when he receives the respect that he desires, then he sees to make a way in which she receives the love that she desires. And when she receives the love, you see how it goes? Over and over and over. Energizing, continuing to keep the marriage growing. Well, for just a few moments, I want to just talk about the right reward. These are great blessings for a home. And those that will appreciate it will be wise and apply it. To get their love and respect must be shown by both. And it will lead to the right rewards. The real reason to love and respect, and I want you to understand this, whatever spouse you are, if you're the male or if you're the female, the real reason to love and respect is because you want to love and respect God. And you want to go to heaven when you die. I mean, that has to be the ultimate reason. And so his love then is going to bless regardless of her respect. And her respect will seek to bless regardless of his love. In a ultimate sense, your marriage really has nothing to do about your spouse and has everything to do with you and your relationship with Christ and God. That's why I said way at the beginning that when you find marriage problems, then you know that either one or both spouses has a faith problem. If we love God the most, then we will be brought together with our spouse. That's why Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." John 14:15. That's why Jesus said, "Be faithful unto death, and I'll give you the crown." Be faithful to who? To Christ. You do this and he's going to reward you with a heavenly home. But it also is true that he rewards you here on earth with a happy home. I was thinking about this passage in Colossians chapter 3. And it is not written to spouses. It is not contextually regarding marriage. But I thought, what if you did apply it to your marriage? It would ring true still. And it's this passage in Colossians 3, 23 through 25 about work, where he says, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you'll receive inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. So while he's talking about work, I think it appropriately applies to marriage as well, right? Because there's going to be times where he's hard to respect or she's hard to love. But if you work heartily for the Lord and not for men, then understand you're going to receive your reward in the end. Because ultimately, you are serving Christ, aren't you? But it's also true, for the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong that he has done. And there's no partiality. And you won't be able to say on that last day, well, if she just would have done this for me, then I would have been this way for her. No. The wrongdoer is paid back for the wrong he has done. See, God knows what is best. He knows, we read there in Ephesians 5:33, his needs and her needs, primary needs. Again, we speak generally. We're not saying that the woman doesn't need to be respected and the man doesn't need to be loved. We're talking about what they primarily need for a happy, functioning home. And that even if the crazy cycle starts to take place, right? And the love and lack of love and lack of respect starts to enter in, you have to recognize, think about these verses here. One of you has to be the bigger person and say, I'm going to break the cycle regardless of how they're treating me. Because I love God and because I want to go to heaven when it's over. You know, that's why I start off the way I did at the beginning, that we're not perfect individuals. We have our imperfections. We have our weaknesses. We have our shortcomings. But you need to ask yourself the question, do you believe that your spouse generally is good-hearted and not evil? And if that is true, that they are good-hearted, then give them the benefit of the doubt. That means when they're treating you in such a way that's not right biblically, wives, you need to conclude that your husband, he's not plotting to irritate you. He's not trying to frustrate you or ignore your feelings. He's just kind of on autopilot. Maybe when he sees you change, maybe it'll kick him out of that. Same with the husbands. They need to conclude that the wives are not plotting against them. They're not trying to irritate you, but they're maybe on autopilot. And the deep down inside, she really does respect you. See, you need to decide that your wife is not intending to be disrespectful. Wives need to decide deep down inside that their husband is not trying to be unloving, to give one another the benefit of the doubt, and to do what you can to serve the Lord, your God, and to be the spouse you are to be, regardless of how they are being. And going a long way to achieve that is to just conclude that your spouse's intentions are good, and that you're going to do the best you can, regardless of how they're treating you. This will make marriage right. God always intended for marriage to be right, and His Word, as we said at the beginning, is the key to a right relationship and right marriage. Giving the spouse the benefit of the doubt. Love thinks no evil, right? And love does not behave rudely. And so we need to seek to achieve that. To seek to how we can please the other, even above our own needs and desires. And that is hard. That's not an easy thing to do. And yet it's what God has called us to do. May God bless you in trying to achieve that in your homes. May God bless you with long, happy lives together, those of you that are married, those of you that one day will be married. I'm here to tell you, God has given us the keys. It's just up to us to use them to the best of our ability. And may God bless you in doing that. If you're here tonight and you're not a child of God, will you repent and be baptized? Jesus said, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved, and you have an opportunity to be saved tonight. Like I said, that's the most important thing in the end. And you can get to heaven whether you're married or unmarried as long as you obey that plan of salvation. If you're here tonight and you're a child of God, you've obeyed that plan of salvation, but you've gone away, gone astray, this is also time for you to get your life right. And if we can assist you, once you come, while we stand and sing. Jesus, and be always pure and good. Would you walk with Him within the narrow road? Would you have Him?